It's good to be together today. It's a blessing to always be able to come and worship with our church family. I will miss you guys next week. There is a church down in Clear Lake. Roy is there today, and I will be there next week. That church, their minister has been diagnosed with cancer and is having a bunch of people fill in as he undergoes his treatments. And so keep Mark, that's the minister there, in your prayers. And as he just undergoes treatments, and for all those who are going to be filling in. So Roy's there this week, I'll be there next week, but it's a blessing to be able to worship together and then to worship with other brothers and sisters in Christ. Next week you will also get the chance to hear Logan preach for us as he grimaces in pain over there on the other side, but I'm sure it will be wonderful for you. But Logan, who's interning with us this summer, is going to be preaching. And I did something mean. I decided our sermon series would be through the book of Jeremiah, which is not one that you tend to study very often, and for good reason. I told a friend of mine this week that we were going to do our entire summer focused on Jeremiah, and he said, "Why would you ever do something that depressing?" Which is maybe how you feel if you've thought about the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah has a difficult role, a difficult lot in life, and we're going to look at that. But also flowing out of that book is a message of hope and of joy and of peace and of blessing. Really, the song that Josiah led us in just a minute ago before we started really kind of summarizes Jeremiah's life and ministry, that Jeremiah chooses to bless the Lord whether things are going well for him or whether things are difficult. And so we're going to look at that book this summer and see what it might be calling us to do and to be in the face of what God means throughout time and space and eternity for his people. So I hope you'll join us this summer as we work through the book of Jeremiah and pray for Logan as he gets a wonderful and difficult passage next week to kind of kick us off. So I'll be kicking off the series today. 626 BCE is a year that probably doesn't stand out to you for much of anything, and for good reason. But 626 BCE is a monumental year, one that historians say changed the course of world history. And I wonder if onlookers and participants and historians of that day and age realized at the time just how much that year would turn their world upside down. We're going to go through some tough names here, so here we go. In that year, the Assyrian king Ashurbanipal, I'm not going to make you say that, nor should that be on any of your children's name lists. But Ashurbanipal, who had been the Assyrian king for more than 40 years, he dies. The Assyrian Empire, which stretched in the areas of today that we would call Iraq, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey, Palestine, Israel, the Golan Heights, West Bank, parts of Saudi Arabia, even down into Egypt and as far across as Afghanistan, all of that being the Assyrian Empire, well, all of that then begins to crumble away as all the factions begin to fight for control. In fact, over the course of the next 20 years, that entire empire will just simply disappear. Meanwhile, a new political power is arriving on the scene. The rise of the Babylonian Empire, who will take their place, began in that same year when Nebuchadnezzar of Chaldea seized the city of Babylon and then began to expand his reign and rule through him and his children over the course of the next 20 years. And this upheaval extended to the nation of Judah as well. 626 BCE is right in the middle of generations of change that have been taking place in Judah and Jerusalem. And it was during that same time that Jeremiah is born. And here's what's happening in Jeremiah's lifetime. He's probably born in the last years of King Manasseh's reign. King Manasseh, who reigned for more than 55 years. Manasseh was the son of Hezekiah, the king who had renovated the temple and restored the right worship and reestablished the worship of Yahweh. Manasseh, when he came, he undid all of that. Everything that Hezekiah had done. He brought the people back into idolatry. He set up idols for all of these various gods and goddesses, not just out in the countryside, but even in the temple itself. He stopped worshiping Yahweh altogether. He brought about injustice, oppression, and iniquity. He sacrificed one of his own children to appease these false deities. He is accused in the Bible of shedding innocent blood, filling Jerusalem with blood from one end and to the other. He oppressed the poor and the powerless. The writer of Kings states that Manasseh led the people so far astray and into such worse sins that they were worse than the nations that they had replaced who had been in the land before them. And for all of these reasons, the book of Kings blames Manasseh for the eventual exile of the nation of Judah. When Manasseh dies after his 55-year reign, his son Amon reigns in his place. And for the next 2 years, he decides he wants to be as bad as his father plus a little bit. He worshiped the idols, he oppressed the people, and he forgot the way of the Lord. And after 2 years, his own servants are tired of it. And they assassinate him one day and place his son Josiah on the throne at the ripe old age of 8. They think an 8-year-old's got to be better than what we've got. And despite his youth and his lack of experience and really just the complete lack of role models in his life, Josiah turns out to be a pretty good king. We're told this about Josiah and his life: "And he did what was right in the eyes of the Lord, and he walked in the way of his father David, and he did not turn aside to the right or to the left. For in the 8th year of his reign, while he was still a boy, he began to seek the God of David his father. And in the 12th year of his reign, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem of all the high places, the Asherim, and the carved and metal images. He begins to undo all of the idolatry that his father and grandfather before him had put into place." And over the course of the next 32 years of his reign, Josiah would eventually go on to restore the temple. He would bring the people back to following the law. He would reestablish the covenant with Yahweh. He would restart the sacrifices. And we're told that he even leads the people to celebrate for the Passover for the first time in more than 400 years, a practice that had simply just disappeared, at least on the whole, in the nation of Judah. And it was in the midst of this cleansing that Jeremiah is undertaking, that Josiah is undertaking, that Jeremiah is called to ministry as a young man. In his life, Josiah had seen a lot of change. Jeremiah had seen a lot of things. Too many J names in today's lesson, I think. Jeremiah was born into a priestly family in the town of Anathoth, a small town just 3 miles northwest of Jerusalem. As the son of a priest, he probably knew the law well. He had grown up knowing the rituals and the symbols and how to undertake all of them and the meaning behind them. And his family had probably lamented as those ideas were repressed under Manasseh and Amon, and how they must have rejoiced when Josiah came on the scene driving out all of this idolatry. And it was in the 13th year of Josiah's reign that Jeremiah is called to be a spokesman, a prophet for the Lord. And in the passage that Brad read this morning, the words of Jeremiah, son of Hilkiah, one of the priests of Anathoth in the territory of Benjamin, the word of the Lord came to him in the 13th year of the reign of Josiah, son of Amon, king of Judah, and throughout the reigns of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah, down to the 5th month of the 11th year of Zedekiah, son of Josiah, king of Judah, when all the people of Jerusalem went into exile. Jeremiah's call came when he was a young man, no older than 16 or 18 at the time. And his prophetic ministry would span the next 40 plus years. You see, he was born in the midst of turmoil as the world and the nation turned upside down, and his entire life and ministry would take place in the midst of turmoil as well. For he would work through the reign of 7 different kings. He would see the city besieged 3 different times. He would watch the people oscillate back and forth between God and the idols and fall constantly into falsehood and idolatry. He would see the people led astray by false prophets, and he would eventually watch the destruction of the city of Jerusalem. And Jeremiah himself would be carried into exile, but not with the people that he loves, but the opposite direction, down into Egypt, where he would eventually die. But as 626 comes on the scene, all of that is still to come. But this is the moment that he's called into ministry. And I wish that we had a deeper discussion of his calling. Where was he? How did this happen? Did he hear a voice or see a vision, receive an angelic visitor? I mean, we get those kind of descriptions for people like Moses in the burning bush, or Gideon as he's hiding in the wine press, or Isaiah as he's praying in the temple. We know where they were and how it happened and when it all took place. And the book of Jeremiah gives us a lot of deep background information for Jeremiah and his life and his ministry. But it's surprising that the very nature of his calling is absent. What we do get are the words, an amazing message, that God has been waiting a long time for Jeremiah. The word of the Lord came to me saying, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I anointed you as a prophet to the nations. God's declaration here as he's speaking to Jeremiah is audacious and it's beautiful. I mean, how amazing are God's words here? We miss some of it in the midst of English, but even before you were conceived, before you were a glimmer in your father's eye, I knew you. And the Hebrew word, the Hebrew idea to know is something profound and intimate. It's more of a personal commitment to someone or something than just an intellectual understanding of it. To know is a sense of connection and commitment. And so God knows Jeremiah. And he's saying, I'm committed to who you are and who I want you to become. So much so that I set you apart from the moment you were born. You are mine, and I have a wonderful task in ministry set out for you. And Jeremiah's calling is on a global scale. It's not just supposed to be confined to Jerusalem, although that's where he does his life and ministry. He's not just speaking to the politicians of Judah, although that's who he begins his ministry to. But Jeremiah's commissioned to be a prophet to all of the nations. His message and ministry, we're going to engage the whole world. In essence, God is saying, hold on, Jeremiah, because things are about to get interesting. Are you ready for what I'm calling you to? To which Jeremiah responds, I'm sorry, what? The Bible records it much more eloquently than how I just stated it, but that's the gist, because this is definitely not what Jeremiah has planned for his life. How Jeremiah states it is this, alas, sovereign Lord, I said, I do not know how to speak, I am too young, which is a very eloquent way of saying I don't know how to talk. Like Moses and Gideon and so many others, Jeremiah doesn't feel adequate for the job that he is assigned. I'm young, I'm inexperienced, I don't speak well. Seriously, this isn't for me. But what he's really trying to say is, God, can you find somebody else? I got other stuff to do. He doesn't know what this calling is going to entail, and he has no idea how difficult his ministry is actually going to be, but he does know that he doesn't feel up for the task. And I really feel for Jeremiah here because this isn't what he has planned for his life. This isn't what he'd been dreaming about since he was small. I am sure that Jeremiah had other dreams and aspirations. He probably wanted to fulfill his duties as a priest, but also just live his normal life in Anathoth. He probably wanted to settle down, get married, have some children, and settle into a normal routine of life. He might have dreamed of other things, but probably not of being a prophet. But because while prophets are respected much later in life, things don't tend to go very well for them in their own time. They're maligned, they're ridiculed, they're ostracized, they're attacked, and oftentimes just killed for the things that they say. God never asks prophets to do easy things, and so very few people ever dream about being a prophet. Yes, I really feel for Jeremiah here. This isn't what he wanted to do, and I feel for him because in a way, in a small way, ministry isn't what I had planned for my own life either. Whenever you meet another minister, typically in the first 5 minutes, you get this discussion. What's your name? What church do you work with? How big is it? And how did you get called into ministry? Which is one of my least favorite questions, yet the question we always ask of one another when you meet another minister. How did you feel called into ministry, led into ministry? We want to know because we expect people to have these amazing, beautiful, intricate stories, this innate drive that led them down this path. But when people ask me how I got into ministry, I can only respond, God. Because this isn't what I wanted to do. When I was in high school, here was my plan. I had planned to go to the Air Force Academy. I was going to major in some science and then go on to med school. I had it all squared away. I knew all the right people. I'd talked to the right people in positions of power and influence. I'd let the military pay for my med school. I'd give them the required time or maybe even the full 20 years, and then I'd get out and have a real life. No offense to those in the military. I don't mean it that way. That was my plan. Sure, I would always help the church. I'd participate, I'd serve, I'd do whatever was asked of me. Maybe I'd even go on some medical mission trips, because that's what my plan was. I would always love God, but I wanted to do other things. But God seemed to have other things in mind. Instead of winding up at the academy, I wound up feeling drawn to Harding. I was pre-med for a while. I was really good at it, and I hated every minute I spent in the lab. So then I switched to psychology, thinking, well, that's at least a little bit better. It didn't fit me very well. And God kept putting other people in my life to call me to ministry. Most of my friends were Bible majors, and all they talked about was Greek, which is boring. No offense. I kept getting calls about internships that I had never applied for. My preacher at my home church asked me to come back and to deliver a series of sermons with him over the course of a couple of Sundays one fall. I felt called to ministry, but I was running the other direction because I didn't want to do this. When I went to do study abroad in Greece, I kept getting suckered into leading the youth group at the local Greek church, mostly because, well, I think because of God, but also no one else wanted to do it. And I still kept refusing my call into ministry. And it wasn't until some random train ride in the middle of Germany, when I sat down with a random person I'd never met before because none of my friends had any space by them, and we began to talk. And I met this young man from Palestine who had grown up Muslim, who had lost his faith, who was an atheist, who was studying in Germany and wanted to be a physicist. And we started talking about soccer, and then we moved into life, we moved into faith, and eventually he gets off the train. And I remember thinking, I have no idea what this means, but this is what I'm supposed to do. And I hated every minute of that thought. I went back to Harding, I added a second Bible major, mostly because I felt like it was what I was supposed to do, but I still had no desire to be a minister. I applied to seminary, to grad school, simply because all my other friends were going and I had nothing else I had thought of that I wanted to do. I wound up getting an internship. I wound up being in ministry over the course of the next 4 years, and somehow I found myself in ministry as the course of my life. God kept putting people in my way and people calling me that direction, and friends and mentors and ministers and opportunities. And he closed other doors and he made me pursue other options. And he brought me to a point where I found myself in this position. And so I got into ministry because God kind of made me, which is a beautiful and wonderful thing. And I'm not comparing myself to Jeremiah's prophetic call, but I am saying I kind of understand how he feels. Jeremiah had other plans for his life, and God said, hold on a second. This isn't what I want to do, Lord, he seems to say. I'm too young, I'm too inexperienced, and frankly, I just don't want to. He wouldn't ever say it quite that plainly, but Jesus, God, I don't speak too well. Find somebody else. But here's God's response. Jeremiah, that's nice. Now get up and get to work. Once again, the Bible puts it a little bit more eloquently than I just did. Instead, it says, but the Lord said to me, don't say I'm too young. You must go to everyone I send you to and say whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you and I will rescue you, declares the Lord. Then the Lord reached out his hand and touched my mouth and said to me, I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I point you over the nations and kingdoms to uproot and tear down, to destroy and overthrow, and to plant and to build. He's saying, this is my ministry. I am God. It's my ministry and my message. And Jeremiah, just go and speak God's words and deliver God's judgment. This is what your ministry is going to be about. It's going to be all about God. It won't be easy, but God promises to be with him. God reaches out and touches him. He gives him the words to speak, his message to proclaim. God promises to always be with him, even when his ministry is tough. And God always promises to rescue him and deliver him from all harm. Jeremiah's calling to ministry will be anything but easy. Because the very next section, the section Brad didn't read for us today, is a series of two visions. One of an olive tree, which serves as a pun that goes over our heads because we don't speak Hebrew, but a pun that tells the people that God is always watching. And then the second one is a pot of boiling water about to tip over, promising that destruction and purification is coming from the north, and it's not going to go all that well for the people. He doesn't have an easy calling. He doesn't have an easy message. In fact, Jeremiah is often called the weeping prophet because his 40 years of ministry are so tough. He faces false prophets, political oppositions, imprisonments, and beating. He's accused of being a false prophet himself, of being an agent of foreign kingdoms, of advocating against the people of Judah. At one point, Jeremiah tries to quit his ministry, but he feels so compelled by his dedication to God and his love for the people that he says it's like a fire in my bones that can't be quenched, and so he continues to speak for God. He's threatened by Judah's kings, consulted by those same kings, and then ultimately ignored by the very kings who called him in the first place, and still he preaches. He calls the people back to God. He confronts the kings and politicians about their abusive policies, their rampant idolatry, and their political maneuverings. Jeremiah warns the people about what is coming, and he watches as they ignore him. He tells the people to turn back to Yahweh and to trust in him rather than in false gods and false alliances, and they mock him for it. And so he watches as the city he loves is surrounded and destroyed, as the temple in which his family would have worked is looted and burned, and as his people are carried off into exile. And yet, in the midst of all of that, Jeremiah also preaches a message of hope, of redemption, of restoration of the land, and of reconciliation to God. Tough times are coming, Jeremiah says. Indeed, they're already here, but God is going to be faithful to his people even when they aren't faithful to him. God is going to take care of his people, so trust, keep the faith, settle into life, and see what amazing things God is going to do. And although Jeremiah feels like he never has much of an impact in his own life and ministry, that really that things are a disaster, and that he can't stop it through his work, generations over the course of the next 2,500 some odd years have been blessed by his ministry and his message. I'm excited for us to work through this book together this summer. I believe Jeremiah has a lot to teach us about faithfulness to God, even when it's difficult. Faithfulness to God, even when politics and policies may seem aligned against us, when it isn't popular with the people around us, even when everything seems to be proceeding in the wrong way. I think Jeremiah is going to challenge us to look at our lives and see what it means to truly honor and worship God. Jeremiah calls us to trust in God when people tell us to trust in other things. Jeremiah reminds us that God is the one who is at work. And he reminds us that God is faithful to his people, that God is the potter, we are the clay, and that God is at work making us into what he wants us to be. Jeremiah reminds us that God's work isn't something we always understand or always see or always comprehend in the moment. He reminds us that God can bring good even in the midst of turmoil, that God is bigger than the small picture that we often glimpse. And Jeremiah is ultimately going to remind us that it's God at work bringing people back into relationship with himself, that it's God's faithful love bringing about a new covenant. And ultimately, Jeremiah is going to point the way to Jesus, the righteous branch and the author of the new covenant, the fulfillment of God's promises to come and bring living water to a people who thirst for God. These are some of the images that Jeremiah gives us. And so I'm excited to see what we learn and understand as we work through this book this summer. So yes, Jeremiah can be really depressing. It can also be full of hope and joy and life and peace and blessing as we seek to follow God. Jeremiah reminds us of the promise that God is always faithful to us, even when we seem far away from him, that God is reaching out and trying to bring us home. And that's the promise that's extended throughout the rest of the Bible story as well. As people run from God, God tends to run after them to bring them home. And we can have hope and life because of Jesus, who is God, who lived among us and calls us to be in relationship with God through Him. If we just want to make Him our Lord and Savior, if we want to give Him our lives, if we want to trust Him with all that we have, then He says, you can come and be a part of this family. It's free and it's grace given to all. All you have to do is be willing to accept it. We're going to offer this time of invitation. If you want to respond publicly, if you feel called to be to come into a deeper relationship with God, if there's anything we can pray about or rejoice over, if times are difficult for you right now and you just need to be reminded of the goodness of God, whatever it is, you're welcome to respond as we sing together. But don't leave today without knowing the trust and faithfulness of God. Let's sing together.